Well, when you hear that music, you know we're headed east. Vince Ferrara, at so Vince good. Sports on Twitter. WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville, which I was checking out when I was passing through over that four-day period. I didn't hear Vince Ferrara, and that made me sad. But now we hear him. Vince, how we doing?
Doing great, gentlemen. How we doing?
Good. You sound a little busy.
He's a busy man.
I was charging my phone, if we want to be totally transparent and pull the curtain back. I was charging my phone, so I kept it on speakerphone in order so I could do that, because I have a placement type of place the phone on their charger, mobile deal. So, yeah, I just had to take it off speaker. That's all.
You know what I thought you were doing? Running out of the parking structure. That's what I thought you were doing.
I am inside. I'm not quite in the parking garage. I was in the parking garage a few moments ago, but I'm good to go now.
Okay. Your overall thoughts, Saturday's game at Neyland?
Yeah, I think Tennessee did what I expected them to do in some ways, and that's give Georgia their toughest test, but it didn't turn out over four quarters to be that much of a test. Still, they racked up a lot of yards, especially considering what Georgia normally gives up. I think Georgia gives up, going into that game, 150 yards on average per game passing, and Tennessee had over 300. So, there are a lot of things that Tennessee did, especially with that great start, and Georgia had given up 12 first-quarter points in all the games and nine games going in, and then they gave up 10 in the first quarter. The problem is that Tennessee didn't get any other points until that last drive in the fourth quarter. But, Georgia's defense is so good. They adjusted. And, Tennessee, when Georgia was able to get pressure in early downs and Tennessee was in tougher positions on second and third down, that made it harder for Tennessee to be able to get that first down in the drive so you can really amp up the tempo. And at first, Georgia was out of position a number of times. And, that first drive was really impressive. So Tennessee did some good things. Hendon Hooker wasn't as sharp as we've seen him. And it just shows how dependent they are of him. He missed on a few throws. They lost Javonte Payton, who's their early game deep ball touchdown threat. And so when he wasn't in the game, it was Ramel Keaton. And Hooker put a ball out there that maybe Payton would have gotten because he's faster. And then Keaton he looked back at the ball too quickly, so it kind of slowed him down some. So, and Hooker missed on a few other throws. I think he felt rushed at times and maybe tried to do too much. So, in the end, I came out of it feeling not any different or worse about Tennessee. And then also I think I was a little bit more impressed in Georgia. You saw Georgia make those adjustments after that first quarter. And then to see them communicate on defense and be on a string and guys going from covering a receiver in the slot to suddenly, two linebackers are covering receivers. Next thing you know, they're all moving in unison to slide over their defense, and now you got two linebackers in the box. And to communicate and be adjusted and ready for the snap so much better after that game. And then, by the way, they got a bunch of dudes, Bennett making plays, running on third down and moving the chains, which has been kryptonite for Tennessee for sure. So I don't think Georgia is invincible. They're not like what LSU was a couple of years ago, those best Alabama teams. But I think everyone else is so inconsistent that there's still a gap there. So I came out of it probably feeling even better about Georgia's chances of running the table and ended up the chance.
Okay, so why aren't they – it's just the opposite side of the ball. Why aren't they as good as that LSU team? Because their defense is just as comparable dominating-wise as LSU's offense was that year. So – and LSU's defense was okay, but it didn't have to be dominant because their offense was so good. So – Why do you think it's what is it? Because they don't have the elite quarterback, or why aren't they as dominant as the LSU team, or comparable, I should say?
Well, because we haven't seen Georgia in any adverse situations that give you the feeling that they're going to be able to win a game in a different way, in a shootout type of game. Now, LSU, you look back on that year, they won games different ways. It wasn't every game 48-45. I mean, they got some things done in some different types of games. And then, oh, by the way, when push comes to shove and you absolutely need your offense, you got elite quarterback, elite skill players to be able to come and rescue the day. It's hard to say that you can, if you're in an adverse situation, that your defense is always going to be able to rescue the day in such an offensive sport right now. So we haven't seen Georgia push to the fourth quarter. We haven't seen them have to rally from behind to where Stetson Bennett now has more on his shoulder, or they have to be one-dimensional on offense to win a game. That was the beauty of that LSU team, is they could do it. And when Alabama was so dominant, I think the sport wasn't quite what it is now. So that would be the reason. I'm not saying that Georgia won't overcome it, or someone is definitely going to get it, because there's some teams with some ability, but there are also plenty of other teams with flaws. But I think that will be the biggest reason, is just not having seen them in all kinds of situations.
Yeah, I would say, though, that's because of how dominant they are. I guess I look back at that LSU team. Let's see, they had a test the second week of the season in Austin against Texas. I'm trying to think of their close game. That Auburn game was a really good game. Of course, the Bama game in Tuscaloosa. But other than that, every game they had was an absolute shelling. They just shellacked them. They blew everybody else out. I don't know. I'm curious. I think it's an interesting conversation. I think, really, it's, to me, says a lot about this Georgia team. What you're saying is factually correct, but I think it's more about them than everybody else. I just think that's how dominant they are. I mean, we did see them at the beginning of the season. Maybe the Clemson game is the equivalent of that Texas game LSU had that year. But, you know, and we'll find out how they look against Alabama in the SEC championship game. But I don't know. I kind of look at them as just like that LSU team 2 years ago, because LSU was so good because they would just score 50 or 60 points every game, so it really didn't matter really how their defense had. But this team, you cannot score on them. I mean, you cannot put up any points on this team. So, you know, it's just, I guess, how you look at it. I don't know.
Well, it is. It's sort of a slightly different conversation. Like I mentioned, I came out of it a little bit more impressed by Georgia, seeing them in person, seeing Bennett. Bennett makes such smart decisions that even if he doesn't pass the eye test for you in terms of stature and athleticism, I mean, he made so many plays where he either threw it away or he found an open receiver flashing across his body, and he avoided negative plays. Georgia just doesn't give up negative plays. So some of his intelligence and underrated athleticism helped him there. So I kind of feel better about them with Bennett than maybe earlier I thought, well, eventually they're going to need the passing of Daniels. Well, they can still do it. And then also because they're so well coached that even if they have tough stretches like that first quarter against Tennessee, they seem to have a coaching answer. So I just think there's such a gap with everybody else that I felt better about Georgia for this year. I guess my only questions would be when you start comparing them historically with some of those other teams, I just don't know that they're complete enough to be on that level, but still probably better than everybody else this year.
Was Cedric Tillman supposed to be this good?
Well, not when he came in. I mean, he wasn't highly rated.
But, I mean, this season, were we talking about him in the fashion that maybe we should be?
I know I was impressed by him in the spring. He had a very good spring. But, again, it's practice versus delivering. I think he had eight catches in his career coming into this year. But we saw ability. We saw a bigger body. We saw a guy that made improvements from the few years that we've seen him here. So I thought he would be in the mix. Now, to put up 200-yard receiving games against the number one defense in the country? No, I don't think we saw that. But it was a bunch of that's what we talked about the receiver position. There were a number of guys with potential, but we hadn't really seen it yet. Well, he's proved it. He's worked at it. And they've raised his confidence. And I think that you can point to player development with Tillman and a number of other guys, Matthew Butler, Theo Jackson. There's a number of guys you can point to for player development. And he's a kid. He's put in the work. But he's a kid that they've gotten him to believe in himself like they did in him. And now he's taking that jump. And having the explosive plays help you with your numbers also. And he's been a guy. And remember how many times they missed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joel Milton early in the year?
Oh, my gosh,
His numbers could be even greater. There are only 9 times in Tennessee football history has a wide receiver had 200 or more yards receiving in a game.
Well, look at his two biggest games this year, Vince.
Yeah.
Georgia and Alabama.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, he had 150-something against Bama.
Right.
At 200 against Georgia. I mean, and then like you said, my goodness, the plays that were missed early on when Joe Milton would throw it 4 rows into the stands when he was wide open.
He was the target oftentimes in those,
Speaking of the quarterback position, you know that it's interesting when Josh Heupel's already getting asked about Hooker's future. Is he going to return or not? What's your gut? What do you think? Is he going to be the quarterback next year, or how do you think that's going to play out?
I think it depends on what the NFL people think of him. I think his NFL stock has increased. Our Jimmy Himes talked to Rick Neuheisel, and he kind of compared him to a Tyrod Taylor. In terms of the NFL. So I think he would be drafted if he comes out. The question is, does he make a decision like a Kenny Pickett and say, I need to continue to develop, take another step, raise my stock, improve on some things, and then I can elevate myself into a potential first-round pick. He's not there yet. So I think that it just depends on what his range is. He's a smart kid, so I think he'll be very thorough about it. Just a matter, Kenny Pickett he got insight from Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning talked to some NFL people and got additional information for him more than what the NFL provides. And that helped him decide, hey, I should stay. Another factor is maybe back the other way to push him towards the NFL. If this isn't a great NFL draft year for quarterbacks. So that may kind of elevate him up some boards as well. So that's another area that still going to plan to dig into and talking to some NFL scouts and how much they've elevated him. But I do think it's up in the air, and it's kind of dicey when we only have one verbal commit quarterback in this class and then Joel Milton behind you as the only scholarship guys right now.
Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, joining us as the Vols will take on South Alabama this Saturday. So I'm going to ask a question. Somebody brought this up on the text line, and I was like, okay, I'll ask Vince. I think I know the answer. But when you get into this time of year and the carousel begins, Josh Heupel has had a nice first year. I think it's looking like 7 wins. Could you do you think there's any interest in him after 1 year in Knoxville?
No, I don't think so. What's crazy is there have been so many of these in-season coaching changes. You guys may have the exact number. I thought I heard yesterday 12.
It seems Flanker about right. Like them.
So, and that's a lot, and that's people wanting to get a jump. I don't, even though, he's in, Rick Neuheisel said last week he thought he was you would name him the SEC Coach of the Year. I think it's tough to name a coach at 500 or just above the Coach of the Year when you've had other programs like Mississippi State and Arkansas make big jumps, and then what Georgia has been I think he would be in the conversation on the short list, but I don't know about Coach of the Year. So, no, I would be surprised. Even if someone does reach out to him, it's a great job if you can fix it. And if you can be the guy to bring it back, my goodness. So I don't think so. And look, this happens, Chase, not surprised that someone thought about it and asked you guys about it. I mean, we went through this with Dooley after year one.
Yeah.
I mean, people were like, oh, what if Georgia calls? And they did, what if for Pruitt? What if Alabama calls? And, during the first year when it's not even done yet, I don't think that is very high on. And the Lane Kiffin thing, I'm sure that's a scar that will always be there. So you always have to wonder. But I wouldn't sweat that too much. Probably other things to worry about ahead of that.
Yeah, and I think, too, you look at, you brought up Dooley. I mean, Butch, I guess, went 5-7 his first year. He gets to 7 wins in the second year, but it's how do you build after the first year? And I think if now they got 2 games to play, anything can happen, mm-hmm. but if they get to 7 wins in a bowl in year one, I think that, 7 wins is exceeding expectations, in my opinion. I was thinking it was going to be 5 or 6 in year one, and he's been in some close games, lost to Pitt, lost to Ole Miss in a close game, but won a close game against Kentucky. So I think you have to feel good about some of the progress that they're making. Now, can you do it in year two when you get another recruiting class in here and all of that?
No question. And look, it's more than just the win total, because I had him at 6-6. So even if they get 7 for the regular season, then that's going to be above that. But you have the potential with a bowl win, and Tennessee's had bowl success of 8. And 8, actually, from 2008 to 2014, Tennessee didn't have a single 8 or 9 win season. And if Tennessee gets to 8 wins this year, between the regular season and the bowl, it will be the fourth time in the last 7 years they've gotten to 8 or 9 wins. I mean, think about that. We're still looking at this as the horrible times in Tennessee football history, but there's a few spikes. There was 2015 to 2016 spiking under Butch with 9 wins. You had 2019 with Pruitt, and if they do it this year, you have it again. That just shows you it's kind of happening different now. There's some spikes, but then the lows have dropped, the ceiling, the floor has dropped lower than it used to. And then one other factor, it's another reminder that you can't assume that this is now the path automatically to championships and SEC success, because it's happened before and it's gone south after that. It looks great. It's a great first step. But again, it's not a guaranteed thing, and he's got to deliver in recruiting still. That's still a TBD to see if he can elevate that, because you need coaching and development, but you need the dudes at the same time.
All right, let's move from TBD to TBA and talk a little basketballs.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know they played UT Martin and ETSU to start the season, but 2 wins there. This Saturday, though, excited to see them play Villanova, but what have you seen out of Rick Barnes and his squad so far?
Yeah, better in game 2 than game 1. Obviously, Kennedy Chandler being the SEC freshman of the week, and just ridiculous in his ability, his fat flash plays. He was expected, a lot of people thought he'd be the SEC freshman of the year. He's shown nothing different than that. His ability to just snake through traffic in the lane, his ability to pass. He's improved as a defender and as a perimeter shooter. Rick Barnes rides him hard, but Rick Barnes says he wants to be coached, and he's a really good teammate. So a lot of the intangibles seem to be, those boxes seem to be checked right now in addition to the play. Obviously, like you mentioned, Chase, it's a big step up in competition. Villanova's the number 5 team in the country, so well coached. Terrific guards as well. So this will be a test to see where they're truly at. And look, after that, they're either going to play the number 6 team in the country in Purdue or the number 18 team in the country in North Carolina when they're ranked 17th. So they're going to get 2 challenges this weekend. I think it will say a lot more. Very positive that Olivier Kamwa in the post as a forward has had career games in each of his first 2 games. And Rick Barnes thinks that he could continue that. That's big, because then you don't have to rush your young post. So it's been a good start. They're jacking up a bunch of threes, but that's because they have so many shooters that now you look at this team, and whether it's Justin Powell, the Auburn transfer, or Victor Bailey, or Viscovi, or you can go on Chandler. When it leaves their hands, you got to the point now where you think it's going in. And that's much different than last year, where it was more of a struggle for them to score, and they were relying on their freshmen to create too much. It's just much more of a team, and they're deeper than we've seen in a long time. And Desmond Oliver, the former assistant who is ETSU's coach, he absolutely raved about Kennedy Chandler. He said he's the best point guard in the country already, two games into his college career. So, I mean, yeah, huge praise for Chandler and for Tennessee.
Yeah, and he also compared him to Kyrie Irving, which that's like, whoa, let's pump the brakes a little.
I got you. Yeah.
And I don't believe he doesn't feel the same way about the world either. I'm sure that Kennedy thinks it's round. The earth is round, I'm sure. But I'll tell you what, he looks good. He looks really good. Hey, thanks for the visit as always. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Enjoy it. Thanks, guys.
Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. And he does look really good, and that basketball team looks really good. But Desmond Oliver, come on.
Going to be a good one on Saturday.
I hate the comparisons. I hate him. This age. He's 18.
I know.
He's 18. You know?
Yeah, you just got to be. I mean, people do it. Like, we all do it. We all start comparisons. But, you know, it's an unfair game to play.
Yeah. But he does look like he's the real deal. He looks really, really good. So, all right, let me talk to you about my friends over at Curation CBD. If you're like me, and from time to time or all the time, just sort of feels like sometimes, you've got aches and pains, all over your body. You've got aches and pains in certain places like me. Well, and you've been looking for a solution. You've been looking like, how do I get out of this? Man, what's going on here? Like for Chase's neck yesterday. You know, he could have used some Curation CBD, you know, to help his neck pain. Curation means healing, and that right there says a lot. Curation is locally and organically sourced CBD products from right here in Middle Tennessee, from seed to final cell. Curation is passionate about providing quality products for everyday use, and that's for your pets, too. If you've got a dog like myself that has medical issues like seizures all the time, it has been a game changer in our house. The pet tincture, she's on every day. Her seizures have stopped. She's lost weight. She's full of energy. She acts like a dog again. And you know what? For 3+ years, she did not. We couldn't say that before the pet tincture, which she's been on for 3+ months. Right now, you can order yours now at CurationCompany.com. And there is a little DDC special for you. Right now, through the 28th, so that is for the next 11 days, you can get 50% off. You must use the code DDC50. Use the code DDC50 on their website through November 28th, and you can get 50% off. Yes. Also, that 50% off sale is going on at the Painted Tree in Franklin, where you can find their products. It's Curation CBD, curated for life.